Around the NFL Podcast. Hasn't shown up for workouts.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Ho.
Sunday night, the flagship show, week 8. Wes, I heard there's some drama going down in the newsroom.
I ran down to the newsroom to pick up my hat because it's a little cool in here. And the whole newsroom was buzzing about an incident at your vacant desk.
Hamana, hamana.
One of the beers and IPA that our listeners, one of our listeners sent to us a couple of years ago, exploded all over your desk and into the office of a shadowy figure right next to you. It's all over his floor. They're going to have to get the cleaning people in here.
Not just any shadowy league figure. Dave Schott, who otherwise is a nice guy, but he is an insufferable New England sports fan who is riding a little too high on the Pats and the Sox and the Bruins, and it drives me crazy because all my teams suck. So this feels like cosmically why that beer was always at that spot in my desk.
Yeah.
That pressurized content blew a hole in the top of the beer can and makes me wonder why I spent 25 years of my life drinking something with that kind of power. What could it be doing to our bodies?
I will. When you mentioned that there was a chaotic scene happening at Dan's desk, and I whispered into your ear, I do all the time. I love to do that with Wes.
Apparently, that beer can has been on your radar.
It has, because I'll often walk by Dan's desk, and the beer can made a explosive sound around 6 months ago or so.
That alert ticking time bomb.
Because it was one of these cans where it's, you know, you find it, it's been somewhere refrigerated for far too long, and the top looked like it was ready to pop. And so every time I'd walk by, I thought, something is not right with that bullet about to be shot into the ceiling. Instead, it shot into Schott's house.
That's great.
This is the worst moment for Schott since that barbed wire tattoo 25 years ago.
I wonder if I'll get in trouble because it is on my desk. It's beer.
It's an alcoholic beverage on the premises on your desk.
I'm sure it stinks down there.
Oh, it smells like a brewery.
I will not return to the scene of the crime tonight because I feel like I just need to get as far away as possible.
I will put it this way. Before I turn the corner to walk into the newsroom, I smelled and I was thinking, who's drinking IPAs? I could not only tell it was a beer, I could tell specifically it was an IPA. Smelled so bad.
My favorite thing was, Dan asked, is anyone anywhere in the crowded, packed newsroom filled with people, very able-bodied people, anyone making any effort to clean it up at all? No was the answer. Not a person.
Until I went down there, nobody had touched the crime scene.
High drama. High drama in the newsroom. All right. We have a lot to get to today. And we have teams remaining undefeated and looking damn good in doing so, and a crushing bit of injury news that we'll get to early in the show. So let's get to work. We have to start somewhere, and we decided in a slate where there was no game that really, Greg, jumped out at us as a pure lead the show, maybe give the Niners a little shine. So let's do it.
27-3, lead down to 27-13. Jet sweep motion to Sanders. Inside handoff to Debo. Second level, touchdown! San Francisco! Debo Samuel's on the inside
handoff. Can you say hi, Candy? Because that's what Carolina's looking at. And you get it to the finisher. Debo Samuel.
The San Francisco 49ers radio network. Greg Papa with a call. Tevin Coleman scored 3 of his 4 touchdowns in the first half. And oh my goodness, Nick Bosa, you are a star. 3 sacks and a leaping interception. The Niners, they stay unbeaten. 51-13. 50 burger over the Panthers. Wes, Carolina came into the big bell bottom riding a 4-game winning streak, but they didn't have a chance against the Niners team playing like a juggernaut.
Since the 49ers week 4 bye, they have treated Baker Mayfield like a piñata, given Jared Goff the worst start of his career, I think even including the Jeff Fisher era, shut out the Redskins, and now probably took the starting job away from Kyle Allen in Carolina with a 3 interception, 7 sack performance that also included missing Curtis Samuel open in the end zone for an early touchdown opportunity. This is just a dominating defense right now. I know the Patriots are right up there with the 49ers as the two best defenses in football this year. And the offense, you know, we've been saying all year, this is not really a quarterback-driven offense. It's a running game-driven offense. And you can throw Kyle Shanahan's scheming in there with it. He had some brilliant plays today, including an inside handoff off I think, a wing T formation for Deebo Samuel, a wide receiver that went for 20 yards. This was a complete undressing. We've said a few times this year already, the 49ers have just unleashed a wall-to-wall butt-kicking on teams. The Bengals in week two, the Browns, the Rams, and then this was another one with the Panthers.
Wearing their 94 throwback uniforms, too. It all felt right in the San Francisco.
People on Twitter or wherever that are on the they haven't beaten anyone train in general should take a look at the traits of Super Bowl champions over the years. And the most common trait that there is that you beat down bad teams. That's how you separate great teams from good teams. The good teams have close games. And the 49ers will have a lot of close games, I'm sure, down the stretch when they play some of the better teams. But the way that you know you're a great team is that you win convincingly. And the Panthers came into this game as a top five defense in terms of DVOA, in terms of efficiency, especially good against the pass. They were efficient throwing the ball today. The 49ers were against Carolina. So you don't need to see anymore. I mean, San Francisco and New England through the first half of the year are ahead of the pack. I don't think it's going to stay that way, but there's nothing you can do to discount what they've accomplished.
Well, I hope that ridiculous "you haven't played anyone" chanting on Twitter just has died down at this point, because you did play someone when you played Cleveland and beat them the way that you did, because that team can run the ball and that defense shut them down entirely.
The Rams.
You whipped the Rams. You allowed 10 points in 3 weeks before this game. And I thought that the Panthers, to give up 13 points to them, not a great offense at all, but to devastate them the way you did, the Panthers to me were a wild card team and may still be. So I don't, these ridiculous ideas that you have to go out and beat a 6-1 team every week is ridiculous. They are the team. Someone come challenge them. They're leaving everyone devastated when the game is over, devastated with every coach having to answer a ton of questions.
They keep playing with the lead too, which, you know, is perfect for the style that they play. Maybe we'll see something different when another team forces them to play from behind, but it's been a formula that has been dominant.
Emmanuel Sanders made an instant impact. He had a touchdown, 4 catches. George Kittle, for the third time, I believe, this season, had a touchdown wiped out by a penalty on the Niners. So that stinks for him. But he is, on a weekly basis, he is such a monster for them. But, yeah, this is a game where they piled up 232 yards on the ground. They're 7-0. This is the highest scoring game for San Francisco in 26 years. And also, my favorite stat of Week 8, gentlemen, scoregami, as they call it. Mm. This was the first 51-13 final in NFL history.
Mm. And it's got to be one of the only times in NFL history that a pair of brothers put up 5 sacks, a couple turnovers for us between Nick and Joey Bosa. We'll get to Joey later. But Nick Bosa with his 3 sacks and the interception, you can talk about, Wes. I just think at this point, I've thought about him as a defensive rookie of the year. Ken, at this point, I said it, I think last week, that I think he's right there with the best pass rushers in football. He started out a little slow because of his injury in terms of snaps played, but we're still very early in the season, and I think he has a chance to go on and be talked about as one of the best defensive players in the league and be in the mix for that award.
Especially when one of those players, and we'll get to in a bit, that is vying for that coveted title, Defensive Player of the Year, is no longer in the mix in Houston.
Three first half sacks just for him alone, 6 for the team. That athletic interception he had off a deflected pass, his own deflected pass, in the second half, this has been multiple games he has just absolutely taken over and demolished the offensive tackle in front of him. It has happened over and over again. You have to put him in the mix for Defensive Player of the Year when there's no clear-cut front runner. I think Cameron Jordan is a guy people like for that award. You always have Aaron Donald. Put him in there. Look at the talent they've had on that defensive line, and they've been, frankly, subpar before he got there. And now Arik Armstead is playing like a Pro Bowler, and that whole defensive line is just flat-out incredible. And I think you, on a day when the Falcons owner is talking about how disappointed he is in his team and he'll review the coaching staff in a couple weeks, you have to ask yourself if we're going to start seeing teams not let these offensive minds out of the building. I know Kyle Shanahan is special, and, you know, he's up there with McVay, Don't let him out of the building. You have to ask yourself, when a guy like that is going to be poached, is your figurehead head coach, who's just doing nothing more than instilling culture, more important than your brilliant offensive mind?
Before we move on, we love our old friend, Dick Stockton. We had some good Stockton audio for you guys. You want to hear it?
Called the 75 World Series.
At the 24, on the return, and Zylstra with a flag down. No, sorry, that was just someone's hot dog wrapper on the field.
Dickie Stockton, Rich Stockton with the call. Let's move on. I can see how that could happen.
Wentz in the gun. Wentz gives it off again and running up the middle, picking up a first down and more at the 40, 35, 40, and Sanders, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown! Miles Sanders!
His first NFL rushing touchdown, and he outruns everybody, leaving all of the blue shirts in his wake for his first NFL touchdown.
We have been waiting for that to happen.
Time now for Road to Victory, presented by the United States Marine Corps. Can you say statement win? Yes, Greg, it's a statement win. Miles Sanders, the play of the game, that 65-yard run to put the Eagles in control. They stayed in control. A huge 31-13 win over the Bills in Buffalo. The Eagles scored three touchdowns on the ground, piled up 218 rushing yards against that Bills defense. It's the most the Bills have allowed on the ground since the Pats back in late December. And this, to me, for the Eagles, is the type of win that can catapult a team out of mediocrity, which is where they've been mired in this season. And we'll see. We'll see now, because the Eagles have teased us before and let us think that they're ready to do it. And we'll find out down the road, because the next 4 weeks includes their bye and then three home games: Bears, Pats, Seahawks. So we'll see if they're ready to play with the big boys in their building. But for today, there's nothing you could say but praise for a team that dealt with a lot of drama during the week. We'll get into that a little bit later. But to come out of this game and really put it on Buffalo, a game that was tight and low scoring early on, the big play of the game, Josh Allen, about 2 minutes to go in the first half, fumbles the ball. Gets recovered. The Eagles turn that into a touchdown and a two-point conversion to take the lead. And that, to me, is when things kind of changed. Miles Sanders then has that run in the third quarter, and they kind of coast from there. So after a week of drama, after ugly losses to the Vikings and Eagles, just a huge win for Philadelphia.
It's like the Eagles remind you how long the season is and how it flip-flops from week to week, because they're the team, I feel like our impression of them has altered from one end of the spectrum to the next. It raises for me on the Buffalo front just a general concern that has been voiced on the show before, is they aren't an explosive offense. They are very much anchored on their running quarterback, and when he's going to turn the ball over and flip-flop the points the way he did, you nailed it with that when they went up 11-7 there. Buffalo, how do they get out of those jams? They're also, like the Niners, a team that's only going to climb out to these records when they're up early and their defense doesn't allow anyone on the other team to have an explosive afternoon the way that Miles Sanders did today.
And is their formula going to work if the defense isn't dominant? This is two straight weeks in a row they've not been dominant. We've been giving them kind of a pass, well, except for Greg. We've been giving them a pass at quarterback while Josh Allen develops, but he's not developing fast enough if the defense isn't going to shut
people
down.
Yeah, they were 12th in efficiency defensively. They're giving up, going into this game, giving up a lot of long drives and then end up making the plays, but they're someone where I do think you can look at the strength of some of the offenses that they've gone against, and it's going to get tougher. They have some easy wins, but what's the idea here? Are you trying to sneak into the sixth seed? Are you trying to do a little more? I think if you're the Eagles, they're obviously trying to do a lot more. And we ask going into this game, what's their identity? Like, if they're giving up big plays in the running game and they're not mauling people in terms of their offensive line, who are they? And that is how they won today. I mean, they did a lot less under center today with Carson Wentz, where they basically do shotgun every play. They handed the ball to Jordan Howard, who's been one of their most effective players. He did really well. They run for 218 yards. They do a good enough job shutting down Frank Gore and Devin Singletary. And I still think they need to have an explosive element to their offense in terms of the passing game. They haven't done that. Didn't really do a ton of that today. But what a huge win. You get the Bears next week, and then you're bye. You can, if you can get into the bye 5-4, you're loving life.
I like that too, but I'm not sure that I trust today's game as a launching pad for this to be the consistent Eagles. I could still see them being 9-7 or even 7-9, depending on what happens.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying too. It's like they've teased us a couple times this year where you think, oh, now they're ready to take flight, and then it doesn't happen. And in a better world, they had to have a soft schedule coming up where they could start to stack wins and gain confidence, but they will continue to face some of the better teams in the league. I thought it was interesting because I do put stock into this stuff sometimes that Orlando Scandrick, who was with the team, of course, he gets let go, and he goes on FS1 and trashes the team and says straight up that the Eagles are, you know, that team's living off their Super Bowl win and how, you know, basically trying to let the world know how toxic the locker room is. And the Eagles, you know, to a man, rallied around their coach and the team, and then they deliver this performance. So I think there's some connective tissue there.
I think it's important when your veteran players play their best and lead the way. That's kind of the most important thing you can do. Their best players today were Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham and Malcolm Jenkins, all of whom, especially Jenkins, probably haven't played to the level that they have in the past. And even Cox, I think, has been a tick below where he's been. So those guys just playing better and playing to kind of their standard would be huge.
And that bill of bulletin board material, the players-only team meetings, can have a galvanizing effect. We've seen it happen before, but it doesn't always have staying power. It might just be a week one or two thing.
Well, hopefully a team doesn't need that
right
to get up every week. But you never know.
All right. Now,
you never know. I know.
Some people know,
you
some people
know.
Don't. All right. Here we go. There's another undefeated team. Oh, and by the way, I should say that was the road to victory presented by the United States Marine Corps. Now, we talked about one undefeated team. Let's talk about another.
Brady takes the snap, looks over the middle with a pump. Gantz is in the pocket. Now he starts to roll to his right. Throws to the end zone for Edelman. Ties in. Touchdown, Patriots.
That's the way you move in the pocket. Woo! Great composure by the quarterback. Can't defend it when you give this guy time. 14-yard touchdown.
Bob Sosi and Scott Zola. Is Scott Zola's voice deteriorating from screaming all the time now? Is that what's happening?
That or there may be other reasons, but I would put that at the top of the list. I won't guess
speculate
on that.
Oh, one more thing, by the way. PFT reported that the Eagles are pursuing something fun. Quote, something fun ahead of Tuesday's trade deadline.
That came from Greg's former boss, Mike Florio.
Anyway, the Patriots are halfway to perfection in the regular season. Tom Brady connected with Julian Edelman for two touchdowns, and New England's dominating defense had yet another touchdown of its own in a 27-10 win over the Browns in soggy Foxborough. Greg, the Browns at least put up a fight, but this was another rather easy victory, the 300th of Bill Belichick's career.
Yeah, 17 first quarter points, and then the Browns never really made it a game. There was a moment where it was a one-score game, and they had a 3rd and 10 to try to get off the field, and that's the moment they hit James White for a long screen pass, which it just seems like the Patriots have come up with those plays. And at some point, I'm watching this Patriots offense and all the turnovers are deep, and I'm almost thinking, like, are they lucky? Because they are getting lucky on some level. The three turnovers on three successive plays in the first quarter, that is just an outrageous thing to happen. And you can look at each play and break it down and see a lucky element to each one. On one, a Browns offensive lineman kicks the ball out of Nick Chubb's hand. But he did it because Kyle Van Noy pushed him into it. So it's luck and residue. On one, Chubb fumbled it after a really long gain, but Jonathan Jones made a great, you know, play in pursuit to go get him. And then the last one, which I think Browns fans are going to have a hard time, you know, living with, is a shovel pass that Baker Mayfield somehow, you know, gets intercepted on Lawrence Guy. But that sure looked like a play where the Patriots kind of knew what was coming and got in the way and it hit him in the helmet. And so when these two teams play, it's like it's luck and design kind of matching, because one team is so sloppy with 13 penalties in the Browns and one team kind of has everything in order, even if their offense isn't nearly where it wants to be.
Oof. Isn't that part of the And you could point through the years things that weren't so lucky for the Patriots. But isn't, for people that are so sick of the Patriots, part of the explanation in a nutshell that not only are they the best team, the best coach, or the best quarterback, that they seem to get the breaks sometimes.
Right.
And it just drives you crazy.
Right. But I don't mean to say that any of this is because they're – it's because they're kind of putting themselves in position to do that.
And, I agree. And I agree with you.
And the Browns, in this game especially – just had it was just like they were before the bye in terms of shooting themselves in the foot. Odell Beckham dropped a key pass on third down that ended a drive. It's just a lot of little things.
I think the Browns could have used the bye week now for the exercise of Freddie Kitchens on down examining who they went up against. And the fact that on every single possible way, from the way that the players stood on the sideline, they showed an instance where the Browns were in trouble because they had players in front of that yellow stripe. And on the Patriots sideline, they're robotically like a military militia lined up perfectly. And that's excessive, but there are examples, probably 200 or 300 of them in today's game, if you really were able to drill down bit by bit, where Belichick has his players prepared for every instance, which looks to us, I think, sometimes like luck, and Cleveland could not get out of their own way. And I don't, you know, when the ball's kicked out of Nick Chubb's hands, that's not on Nick Chubb, who looked absolutely dynamic and powerful today and looks like the best Browns running back they've had in decades. At the same time, they're always about 50 to 60% there. Like, you see the potential, and that doesn't mean anything in November. We're rolling into November now in the NFL. Cleveland is still figuring out how to work together, and that, to me, is the sign of suspect, naive, still in development coaching.
We talked with Joe Thomas last week, and he had hinted that the Browns would look different on offense. I know it started terribly, but did the bye week lead to any changes in terms of how they attack the opponent?
We talked to him tonight, and I think that Joe Thomas thought he'd see the change that he mentioned, which would be quicker release for Baker Mayfield, but also a lot less mental errors. And I thought they did. I came away from this game not in a total doom and gloom scenario, thinking this team with the schedule they have down the stretch can improve. I don't know what that's going to mean. But they didn't look that. To me, the staple of this Cleveland team has been hideous mental errors, where you're seeing other teams, lesser teams talent-wise, grow out of that. Cleveland has not.
Well, they're leaning into the running game, which I think they should. They're making some big plays for Chubb, some creative looks. Chubb ran really well. I think they want to do short passing. We joined, you know, as you said, Joe Thomas and Andrew Hawkins on their show, the Tomahawk show, tonight, and they were so disappointed because they're doing the short passing in theory to eliminate some mistakes and have things be in rhythm, and they weren't in rhythm. You know, you still had that interception. You still had the OBJ drop at a key spot. You weren't, you know, making explosive plays down the field. And you have to give a ton of credit to Stephon Gilmore, who was guarding Beckham and the rest of the Patriots defense.
Any other thoughts on this game, gentlemen?
I did hear Mark remains undefeated in his first quarter pronunciations. He pronounced this game over. What the blank was that? All right, this thing's over. Late first quarter of a 10-0 game.
Well, that could have been applied, honestly, more to this Browns game than any in a long time, because it's 16 penalties and 3 turnovers. That is 20 instances that completely foiled my optimism this afternoon. It was a tough game to watch and to not watch without, you know, just zip through the commercials and move on with your
day. That's the one thing where the Browns have never let you down. When you make the pronouncement that it's over, it usually is.
I think I lost that once. I think I'm about 25-1.
Right, and the crazy thing is, you watch the game, they didn't look like uneven teams. The Browns averaged more yards per play. They were about the same in yardage. The Browns, I thought, won the line of scrimmage when they were on offense.
You're both saying they just got really outcoached.
Yeah, they got outcoached. They had two terrible challenges. But they also have the far better quarterback. I mean, that cannot be understated.
Who, the Browns do?
No, yes, the Browns do. Tom Brady is playing at a much higher level than Baker Mayfield is right now.
Right. I thought you were saying the opposite.
Yeah, Tom Brady, I think, is playing really well. And this is a point I tried to make, that what's going on around him, they didn't have Shaq Mason today. They didn't have their left tackle, their center, or their right guard. They have Mo Sanu, who comes in, plays 25 snaps, made a couple catches. Their running game has been the worst running game they've had in a long time. And their passing game is not explosive, But, you know, he whenever they've needed a play like that touchdown when he gets outside the pocket, or it's McDaniels calling up a screen on 3rd and 10 when they're backed up and it's a one-score game, or they when they have a play to Dorsett where they only try it like once the whole game but they hit it down the field, I think Brady's been making those plays. He's not where he is before, but PFF going into this week had him about the 7th quarterback in the league. I mean, that sounds about right to me. And people have been kind of saying – down things on him because their offense is definitely way worse than it's been since 2001. But he's not
the perfect setup right now. I mean, if he's not Tom Brady, the super duper star anymore, but he's like the best. He's an elite game manager, a little higher than that. With this defense, I mean, it's a terrifying prospect. The idea of the Pats having an all-time defense with late period Tom Brady not making any mistakes and lording over the offense.
They're your number one seed, and everyone else get out of the way in a conference that outside of the Ravens, who's gonna touch
them? I think the offense will get better as the season goes.
And we'll get into it more on Thursday with our preview show, Mark. But at Denver next week, Cleveland, go win a ball game, or we might have to put you 6 feet under.
So he's like...
Is it a 6 feet under game next week?
Well, because I don't... Again, you know, Greg asked about the Bills. What is the goal? Does Cleveland actually view themselves as a playoff team?
I'm sure they do.
I don't at this point, but...
I think they can contend. This is a big game.
Lose to Denver, and I'm sorry, because I've been killing Denver. We all have for various reasons. You go to lose to an incomplete team...
6 feet under game.
Yeah.
Right. So Brady is Chad Pennington with, like, Merlin the Wizard's brain right now?
Still has a nice arm. Still can sling it.
All right, let's move on.
Brees takes the gun snap, drops back looking to throw. That ball's caught. Latavius Murray at the 10. Turns up field 5 into the end zone. Touchdown, Latavius Murray. 15 yards on the pitch and catch to Latavius Murray. And the Saints take a 16-6 lead.
Zach Strief, Saints Radio Network. Drew Brees. I love this one. Turn this up, Rick.
Play this all day long in my house, please.
It's like the native summoning King Kong on Skull Island or something. All right, you can turn it down.
Love it.
Drew Brees passed for 373 yards and 3 touchdowns in his first game in more than 5 weeks. Thumb surgery. And the Saints, 6 in a row now, 31-9 victory over the Cardinals, who were overmatched. Mark, the Saints end that Arizona 3-game winning streak. We expected that. The bigger question is how Drew Brees looked in his first action in a long time.
Well, it's an interesting game to come off of the Tom Brady conversation because Brees, to me, there's some similar stuff
that
going on.
And,
that's you,
know,
you did a nice job with that, setting those back to back. Brees is also operating neck up the way you'd expect. And he didn't show to me any remnants of holding the ball differently or anything like that off of the thumb surgery. He did have that brace on it. And he still loves to, whenever he's on the sideline, he's fiddling with his thumb nonstop.
He's like, put the camera on
me.
Yeah,
we know.
I know
it's like, you went through a thumb thing. That's good. But they're a bit different. And I feel like Sean Payton did not go out of his way to change the offense a whole lot from the Teddy Bridgewater experience, in the sense that Latavius Murray had 30 touches, and 21 of those were on the ground, but 9 were through the air, where the screen game is still, and this has been a Sean Payton trait, but even more now with the Drew Brees, I think limitations in terms of downfield throwing, which Wes has been hitting, you know, going back to last season. I think it's just an understood reality at this point to some degree. He's still a sharp thrower. He can hit guys on wheel routes and do it unlike anyone else. But they understand who their quarterback is. He still threw the ball 43 times for 373 yards. But I would say the box, go watch it. Maybe I got stuck on this early, but I just felt like his stats were not what I was seeing on the field. And it's not a knock on Brees. Mm. They're very versatile. I think they're still one of the best coach teams in the league. And this game to me was just as much about their defense putting the clamps on an interesting Cardinals offense, but one that, again, cannot... They got down to the Saints' 13-yard line twice and were held to field goals. And then from there, the wheels kind of fell off. They could not get the running game going. Then Chase Edmonds got hurt. And they had Alfred Morris, who they signed, wasn't even active. They just had nothing on the ground. And the Saints also shut down Kyler Murray on the ground. So a triple-dimensional offense went down to a zero-dimensional offense.
So 11 carries for 40 yards on the ground. And we talked about it.
Most of that coming in the last 5 minutes.
8 yards from their running backs.
We talked about it on Thursday. And someone put it out there. A media person, perhaps, that they're a very hard team to plan for now, the Cardinals. Who was it, Aikman?
Greg Olsen.
And it's like, well, let's see what happens when you go to the Superdome, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, against – they were, Arizona was playing some of the worst teams in football, and the Saints are one of the very best teams. And now with Drew Brees there – they, you know, when you look at, you don't want to get too crazy with the big picture, but like, who can beat the Patriots is usually the way I look at football. But the Saints, the way they are currently, presently constituted with Drew back, they have a shot.
No one's sneaking out of this NFC. This is a strong conference at the top.
Absolutely, yep. And I think the Saints keep building confidence, getting better, and playing more complete football as the season goes along. Latavius Murray was a great signing, and we weren't all that excited by it, but they haven't missed Mark Ingram at all. And sometimes, you know, the old saying, you're one injury away from a better team. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, their fourth-round rookie, comes in and plays nickelback because P.J. Williams got hurt. He really caught my eye last week and had a couple of passes defense today. That guy should probably keep the job.
That's three straight weeks. He's been awesome. And I'm not saying they got better with Drew Brees out, but they did learn about their team.
Absolutely.
And I think that's to their advantage. When he got hurt, we said, well, he's got six games before the bye. If they can just go 3-3, you know, maybe they'll be fine. And here now they're going to their bye on a six-game winning streak. And they are – I mean, there's not much of a favorite – a difference between them and the 49ers and, you know, whoever else you want to throw in. There's a lot of good teams in the NFC. But, I mean, I think it's the best Saints team I've seen.
Yep. What?
I mean, through half a season, how complete – they have the best
– no.
Their offensive line is incredible. They have the best tackle combination and the best defense Drew Brees has ever had. So if their offense is just very, very good like it's been
– I can't disagree with you more on that. Mm.
You mean ever?
Compared to what?
Compared to their best teams when Drew Brees was in his prime, Jimmy Graham was in his prime, Darren Sproles was in his prime, they were rolling over.
Right, people. Their offense was great, but that they had a below-average defense.
They've had
defense
two great defenses
that whole
in that span.
Throughout that whole run, that was all on turnovers, and they
turnovers
it
count, Greg.
In the playoffs.
They still
have
time
count.
To go down to the lab tonight,
right.
Guys.
Yeah, I mean, best or not, I think that you're looking at the best coaching. It's the same way that Belichick is coaching and in a different world. I feel that way about Sean Payton, and they're a more complete team than they've been in the past.
And in a league where teams are up and down and have a hard time sustaining success, especially after making the Super Bowl, you know, other than the Patriots, like this is three straight years they've been one of the best five teams in the league. It's kind of their turn.
And then they come out of their bye, and Drew Brees gets more time to get right. I don't think he should have played on something, but, you know, that's a different conversation. They get the Falcons at home. Cupcake. They go to Tampa. How about another cupcake?
NFC South is over, by the way. The Panthers aren't catching up with them.
This team is going to be rolling. This is a 14-2 team, I think. All right, let's keep moving.
First and goal at the 9. Deshaun calls for the ball. Here's the snap. Watson looking. Pocket collapsing. Watson trying to get away. He does to the right. Throws to the end zone. Caught by Fells. Magical. Touchdown, Houston. And the Texans take the lead. And Watson is shaken up at the 15. He's face down.
I don't know if as he was going down, he got a cleat or he got hit in the face as he was going down. But
in
that's
the face.
What they seem to be looking at right here.
They got kicked in the face, right in the eye. Mark Vandermeer and Andre Ware with the call, Texans Radio Network. But he's all right. He's all right. Deshaun Watson would not be denied. The Texans quarterback escaped a sure sack, then found Darren Fells for that touchdown. The deciding score in a 27-24 win over those frisky Oakland Raiders. On that touchdown pass, yes, Watson took the cleat to the eye. It was nearly swollen. I love this guy. This Deshaun Watson. Yeah, hey, he's a player. Hey, dog, he's a player.
All right.
That eye was nearly swollen shut on the last possession for Houston when they were trying to run out the clock. So you would think, oh, maybe hand the ball off three times to Carlos Hyde or Duke Johnson, try to get a first down. F that. Bill O'Brien, who I like the game he called in general, calls for passes, and Watson throws two touchdowns, throws for two more first downs, clinches the game. However, J.J. Watt, and here's the bummer of it all. J.J. Watt was ruled out with a shoulder injury midway through the game, and then Rap Sheet came out with a report that the Texans feared it was a torn pec that would end his season, and then J.J. Watt hopped on Twitter and confirmed it. Here's what Watt had to say, this game can be beautiful and it can also be brutal. Absolutely gutted. Ooh, gutted. That I won't be able to finish the season with my guys and give the fans what they deserve. I truly love this game and can't stand letting you guys down. Thank you for all of the thoughts and well wishes. That is the third time in four seasons Watt ends the season on IR. And obviously a devastating loss for the Texans, who, as we know, Greg Rosenthal, have gone all in on 2019. Well, now they don't have their best player on defense.
And I thought J.J. Watt played the last 2 weeks probably as well as he's played since any of those injuries hit. And he, you know, he said it himself, and I trust that judgment going into it. That makes it tough because I think the Texans had been shaping up as one of the main AFC challengers. I also don't think they're necessarily done without him because ultimately they're an offensive team now. They've right. changed. They are an offensive team this year, probably a little too much weighted towards offense for Romeo Crennel's liking. I think he's probably thought this defense is underachieved a little bit through the first 7 or 8 weeks. And now Deshaun Watson's going to have to put more on his back. He's
but
Superman.
They're a worse team, obviously, without him.
Oh, yeah.
And we already knew the Patriots and the Chiefs, I think, went healthy. But especially the Patriots, if you're talking, again, who can beat the Patriots? The Texans, Wes, needed all the help they could get. And they needed J.J. Watt to be peak Watt. And now he is absent for the rest of the season. It's crushing.
Well, we know the pass rush and the secondary is sort of interconnected in football. The secondary relies on that pass rush to hurry the quarterback. And this secondary is the weak spot on the team. We've been saying that since August. It's bypassed the offensive line as the biggest trouble spot, and it's not getting any better. They do have a good backup. The rookie Charles Amenihu, who we've talked about a few times, is a good backup. He's just not, you know, J.J. Watt, who, like Greg said, was – he was in the running for Defensive Player of the Year this year.
I mean, just to back the truck up a few yards, fun team, like them a lot. Don't even talk to me about them challenging the Patriots in January. They are the quintessential dictionary definition of Patriots fodder. I mean, they are enjoyable, and I think that they could win a playoff game, no doubt. But the minute they hit New England, it's over.
They can throw a lot at you offensively, especially with Will Fuller and the way they're running. And for Watson, I mean, you can't play.
I have a hard time counting him out in any game.
You can't play a better half than they did offensively. They only had the ball four times, a long field goal drive, and then touchdown, and then the three first downs with onion play calls and conversions. I mean, it's one thing to have the play call. It's another thing for Watson running to his right, throwing to his left. Darren Fells makes a one-handed catch. I mean, these guys are executing.
There are three guys that cannot get hurt on the Texans. Watson, Watt, Laremy Tunsil, who also exited this game. DeAndre Hopkins, of course, as well. But Laremy Tunsil, who has played great left tackle since coming over in that trade, he exited with a shoulder injury, and I'm actually doing some web searching right now looking for updates on that. But he left the game. He was questionable but did not return. So you got to keep an eye on that as well. So it was a nice win. Again, the Raiders, I'll give the Raiders this. I don't think they're a great team. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team either. But week after week, they're showing that they can hang with good teams, whether in their building or on the road. It's undeniable progress for John Gruden, and they nearly pulled this game out. It's a credit to Deshaun Watson and Deshaun Watson magic that Houston managed to steal this game. And I imagine because Watson's so special that they aren't doomed and aren't going to be an 8-8 team or something now going forward. I still think they are going to win that division personally, but it's a devastating loss.
They're the most electric team in that division, no doubt. I would put the Raiders, though, as one of the nice surprises of the season. I don't care what the record is right now. The scope of potential disaster in Oakland with the team in its final season in Oakland before they go to Las Vegas, and what was going on with Antonio Brown, and just you throw in the asterisks of John Gruden maybe melting by now, and it is worked out on a team with very few weapons on offense.
They're really good. It's a top 10 offense, but the defense, they're not going to get stops when they...
Derek Carr had another good game. I know you haven't put a lot into this, Greg, but earlier in the season, to me, it did feel like this was an audition year for whether Gruden and Carr would move forward together. And right now it feels like it's a really good bond because they do move the ball on offense. They do a nice job.
I was the one that's suggesting Carr might be out of there. And I'm still not sure that, like, Gruden couldn't become
fascinated
with someone else. But But Carr is basically telling me to go F myself with that.
Saying back your car up.
Yeah. If I had one,
he wouldn't
say
he's a good Christian man, by the way. He would never use that type of language, that performative language.
You're right. He might say back your car up, though.
He would.
Back your own car up.
It's a year of progress for them.
Absolutely. All right, let's move forward.
It's going to be a 41-yarder from the left hash. Pinheiro for the win. The Chargers. Kick is up, and it is no good. The Chargers win. No good. Pinheiro misses, and the Chargers' losing streak comes to an end. They make just enough plays to get out of Chicago with a victory. Pinheiro ends up pulling it left.
Our boy Matt Money Smith, the voice of the Chargers, with the call in January. It was the double doink. On Sunday, it was simply a whiff to the left of the upright by Eddie Pinheiro, who's missed from 41 yards out, doomed the Bears to a 17-16 loss. That's three consecutive defeats for the Bears and the end of a three-game skid for the Chargers, who I'd say are pretty much all even now, even Steven with the football gods after last week's debacle against the Titans. Greg, you know, you can point the finger in a lot of directions in this one, but Matt Nagy, to me, went full Herm Edwards in this one.
Yeah. Why are we accepting 41-yard field goals at the buzzer in 2019 and then defending it after the game like the reporters were basically accosting Matt Nagy? Like, how dare they even question the fact that he had 44 seconds on a defense they had just moved the ball on very quickly and a timeout, and you have a kicker in Pinheiro, hasn't played much in the league, and oh, by the way, missed a 33-yarder.
He's Eddie Pinheiro.
Earlier in the game.
Let's listen to the exchange, the contentious exchange between Bears head coach and local and national media.
I'll just be brutally clear. Zero thought of throwing the football. Zero thought of running the football. You understand me? That's exactly what it was. So it's as simple as that.
Could you explain again why not running the ball? What was...
Did I just say that?
Yeah.
What did I say?
The reasons.
What was it? Fumble. And when they know you're running the football, you lose 3 or 4 yards. That was that.
Matt Nagy.
Well,
No. You ran for 162 yards in this game. You have professional football players and professional blockers. You, hypothetically, believe in your team. So the idea of being afraid to run the ball sends the worst message, and then doubling down on it. In the press conference, it's just such a bad look.
He needs to go see a shrink after that. He's in his own head.
He is. It's almost like, well, we can just point at the kicker being the problem when he wasn't, because the play calling and the quarterback, it's all married here. The end of the first half sequence, to me, was actually a bigger fiasco than the end of the game. Mm. They had 5 plays, I believe, inside the 5. At the end of the first half, they end up running out of time and kicking a field goal. They had 9 plays inside the 5 in the first half and 3 more inside between the 6 and the 10. They didn't score a touchdown on any of them. And some of those, Mitchell Trubisky had plenty of time. And Bears fans are all in my mentions saying, oh, the play call. Every play that Trubisky made today, and he played better today, he made some throws, he got them in position there, were first reads to guys who were wide open. And so that, to me, is play calling. Those are the only plays you're getting. And yes, Trubisky, everyone said, well, he put him in position to win. You know what else he did? He lost them the game with 9:32 to go. And sometimes you get so focused at the end of the game. Here's a sequence for you. 16-10. At this point, I don't want to go on too long, but it's...
Now go.
All right.
Go.
I want to hear.
We want to hear.
All right. At this point in the game, it's 16-10. It's 9:32 left. To set the scene, Trubisky had just thrown a back-breaking pick just a couple minutes before that set the Chargers up in field goal range, and the Bears defense stuffed them 3 and out, and the Chargers missed the kick. So let's give the ball back to Mitch. Let's try to go win the game. You know what Matt Nagy did right there? He got his wide receiver, I believe it was Anthony Miller, isolated on Thomas Davis, who's been in the league for 16 years, streaking down the field, wide open against a young wide receiver. And you know what Trubisky does? He overshoots him by about 15 yards. I mean, there was so much margin for error. What happened the very next play? He lost a fumble by running into the opposing defender. The Chargers punch in that touchdown. Like, that's where the game is lost, is when you're just missing gimmies other quarterbacks are going
to
hit.
And just to make it clear so people know exactly the circumstances, Trubisky late in the game scrambled for 11 yards to get to the Chargers 21.
Did a nice job setting them up overall. Good drive.
The Chargers call timeout. So stopping the clock at 43 seconds. And then at first and 10 from the Chargers 21, with a timeout in their pocket, they decide to kneel on the football. So really it came down to running the football once, and maybe it doesn't go anywhere. That's essentially it. What Nagy's saying, that either run into a wall for a loss, maybe fumble,
I don't know.
Is it worth it? Or maybe you break off a 12-yard run for a chip shot, or you score, who knows?
It's what you do, though, when you have no confidence in your quarterback to execute
right.
a 6-yard throw. When they had a bunch of third, there were a couple third and long situations where they basically had give up plays in the game, and a lot of the play calls inside the 10-yard line were like that.
So if you have so little confidence in your quarterback, do you play the veteran caddy? Or do you say I still need more time to evaluate Mitch Trubisky? What we paid in draft picks to get him, we need 8 more games to evaluate him.
Well, I guess why would you not? I'm down on Mitch Trubisky, but I would take the time to evaluate, because otherwise you are learning about a quarterback that is not your future at all and your backup.
It's tough to give up on Trubisky
right.
until he gives you absolutely no other choice. But
he's getting there.
I think he's getting there. The tricky thing, if you're Nagy, I think they've won some games where they maybe have gotten a little lucky. This game, they were the better team. I mean, their defense shut the Chargers down. They outgained them by 150. They moved the ball. They ran it really well. Your boy David Montgomery West had his best game of the year. And it was really just a couple plays Rivers made, and Joey Bosa making really well-timed sacks on third down that kept the Chargers in it, but the Bears blew this one.
And because I'm a monster, I asked Ricky to pull the Bears radio call of the final seconds of the game. Let's listen.
Come on, Eddie. Operation's got to be smooth. Patrick Scales on the ball. Dish for a Bears win.
Oh,
snap. Placement
come on,
down
Eddie.
By O'Donnell. Kick by Eddie Pinheiro. Kick is up. No! He is no good. He missed it. As time expires.
Oh.
17-16.
That's
Chargers
rough.
The win.
I thought it was good.
An operation smooth. It twisted away left. And the Chargers end their 3-game losing streak.
Jeff Joniak and
that
Tom Payne. It's good to know there, you know, other people in the world are miserable about
it. It does seem like we pay the price
not
for watching these television feeds week after week, because what's coming through the radio feeds are about 15 times juicier.
Let's move on.
Matthews got it. Toss sweep right side to McKissick. He throws it back to Stafford. Stafford's going to throw it deep down the field. He's there! Touchdown to Detroit Lions!
Said, come on, Eddie.
Oh, baby, a little bit of magic! That is Kenny Golladay on the receiving end.
He said, oh, I thought he made it.
They gave it to McKissick, who made
his
way around the left side. Threw it
back to
Stafford. Stafford set and threw it deep downfield to Golladay. How about that?
Blind sense. Why are they talking over the highlight?
Calm down. They got your highlight.
You got 4 weeks worth of compliments out of us on your team. Deal with it.
Dan Miller with the call. Matthew Stafford threw 3 touchdowns. And by the way, the Lions are not the team around the NFL. I've seen some people confused about that.
I can see why people were confused based on the conversation not really being buttoned up at the end.
Right.
But they definitively are not the team of ATL.
No.
Anyway, Matthew Stafford threw 3 touchdowns, 2 of them to star wide receiver Matt Golladay. And the Lions ended a 3-game losing skid, a 31-26 win over the Giants at Ford Field. Mark, we commanded the Lions to go win a football game at home on Sunday. They honored our demand. They stay in the picture.
They took care of business. I went and read some of the, because the game was a little was strange for multiple reasons. I just wanted to see what some of the Detroit writers took out of the win. And a couple kind of seemed dismayed that Detroit needed to, as you just saw at that highlight, use trickery to beat a team as lowly as the Giants. I didn't have a problem with any of this because if you're Detroit, just find a way to get this thing done. And they effectively, they got the game going well on their first defensive touchdown of the year where Daniel Jones did what he's going to do once a game, a vicious strip sack where the ball floated around, and then Devin Kennard rolled it in for a 16-yard touchdown to go up 7-0. Giants bounced back very well from that. I thought that Daniel Jones did something else he's going to do, which is throw two very pretty passes, a couple of scores.
Great and, stat line in this game.
Yeah, he looked good. The one thing about him is that he'll make that critical killer error where you might see another quarterback crumble mentally, and Jones does seem to bounce back from that and have a pretty short memory. The game just became sort of a flip-flop between both teams going back and forth, and the difference for me is that this year's Detroit Lions, and we saw a little bit of against Green Bay and some weeks going back, they're, you know, they were such a plodding, whether it was passing or running, a plodding attack for so long, even though people always like to cite their comebacks in that one season and all that stuff. They have explosive play capability, and it is Galladay, and even Danny Amendola today had a couple big catches. Marvin Hall.
Hall's been making a big catch every week.
Marvin Hall had a big touchdown. So, you know, Detroit, they're 3-3-1. They just have that look of a team that's going to be 8-7-1 or 7-8-1 and drive their writers nuts week to week and drive expectations if they're high nuts. And when you think they're gone, they're going to win a game like this and hang around.
Matthew Stafford is having arguably his best season. You look at the numbers right now, he's fifth in the NFL in QBR. He's on pace to throw 35 touchdowns, just 8 interceptions. He's on pace for another 4,700-yard season. And, Wes, we had this conversation before the season, and I remember you being maybe not even on the fence, more under the impression, you know, Stafford's not kind of a special guy. Has his play this season changed the way you feel at all?
I think with Stafford, he's one of those guys where you always know he's one of the most talented quarterbacks in the league, especially arm talent, but he's never beat good teams, so it's been like a more talented version of Kirk Cousins. And a lot of that's been coaching and surrounding talent and never having a running game. This year, I've been really impressed with him. I've always loved his pocket movement. And as I said earlier in the year, I'd love to see him with a better coach. You can't really argue with what the coaching's done this year. The offense hasn't really been a problem for the Lions.
No, I think Darrell Bevell has done a good job. They don't have much of a running game now without Kerryon Johnson. I do wonder, Kenyon Drake was held home by the Miami Dolphins.
He's getting moved.
For Monday night. And so he's not injured. So they're clearly looking to trade him. I think there will be a lot of trades. That feels like a low-cost trade that would maybe help the Lions.
Well, and Ian Rappaport, our very own, noted in a post this morning for NFL.com that the Lions are specifically interested in adding a running back. So, you know, you put all that together.
They have the need more than any team in the NFL right now.
Right.
They started Trey Carson, who was on the Packers practice squad and moves like a fullback. So, well, I don't know if they started him, but he got the most yards and carries today.
Giants are having a players-only meeting tomorrow, so that means their season is officially over.
Let's move on.
Third and goal from the 8. Minshew drops the throw. Minshew looks. Scrambles to his right. Looks. Pump fake. Still looks. Pump fake. Fires toward the end zone.
Caught by DJ Chark. Touchdown! Chark attack in the corner of the end zone. And the Jags extend the lead.
Ooh, look at you, Frank Frangi. Frank Frangi.
Great name.
Jags Radio Network. Gardner Minshew, the second. He threw 3 touchdown passes, including that game clincher to DJ Chark. A shark attack.
Why do you pronounce it Minshew?
Minshew. Yeah, I just like it that way.
Okay.
On our Thursday wrap-up show, how did you pronounce that one word, Mark? What was it again?
I mean, you might as... I can't...
Quagmire?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Quagmire versus Quagmire.
You said Quagmire. Quagmire.
Quagmire is...
I say Minshew. What do you say?
Minshew.
Oh. Right. Better start saying Winshew.
Hey, now!
The Jaguars feasted on the Jets' porous offensive line and their struggling quarterback. 29-15 win at the big chlorine tank. The Jags had 8 sacks, pressured Sam Darnold into 3 interceptions, including a back-breaking pick midway through the fourth quarter. Minshew played incredibly well. I was really impressed.
You were asking to see something from him. Where are you now?
I'd not see something, but I thought that it was with Foles, you know, approaching health. I imagine. I'm not like tracking this too closely, but I would think the timetable's lining up where he's probably getting closer.
A couple weeks away.
If Minshew put together a few more bangers, it's going to be very hard slash impossible to take him out. Well, this was a certified banger because he did all the right things against the Jets, and his ability to extend plays was what really stood out to me. And when he extended plays, he was able to throw the ball with great touch. He didn't make mistakes. He looked just a lot. He just looked a lot better than Sam Darnold, who is clearly regressing now, and he has to take a lot of some of that blame because he's making bad mistakes. His interceptions again, while he didn't look even close to the guy that was totally lost against the Patriots. In fact, on the Jets' opening possession, they went 90 yards, and he went 7 for 7 with 88 yards and a touchdown pass. So there was progress, but he also you see him trying to do too much, and you see the offensive line causing him to throw the ball when he shouldn't be throwing the ball, and in general, just not going in the right direction. And again, Adam Gase, his job here was to make Sam Darnold better. So if Sam Darnold's not getting better, and the team looks outclassed on a weekly basis, you just have to start to ask questions. But on the Jaguar side, a nice win. Minshew looks great. And that team is rejuvenated without Jalen Ramsey.
And this Jets offensive line is bad, but it's not the only offensive line that has trouble with Calais Campbell, Yannick Ngakoue, and Josh Allen, who have been excellent this year. This is a reinvigorated defensive front for the Jaguars.
They've beaten up on, you know, some of the lesser teams over the last couple weeks, but their 4-4 in that division is wide open. And the way Minshew's playing, I'm with you. I think if he continues to play like this, not only do you just want to keep winning and think that maybe he gives you the best chance to win, you really want to see what you have in this guy, because this team's not winning the Super Bowl this year, most likely. But I think he will affect the way you think about the quarterback position in the offseason if he can play like this.
100%. I mean, Minshew did not just outplay Sam Darnold today. He is outplaying Baker Mayfield this entire season, Josh Allen, and everyone from that quarterback class 2 years ago outside of Lamar Jackson right now, who's a completely different type of human being on the football field. Why would you, if you're Nick Foles and you go in there and you have one of those games where you throw three interceptions, the house is going to go literally nuts on you. I don't think you shake this up until Minshew does what Kyle Allen did and, you know, makes it inevitable for a change. He's totally different.
Minshew's different than Kyle Allen. He's
played a lot
better. Making plays.
Right. Well, and Foles is, I think, 3 weeks away from even being eligible. So these things usually work themselves out one way or another. Either he'll just be too obviously good or not. I think the Jets, on the other hand, are in a tricky spot. You know, they have the new general manager. We've heard some players are available ahead of the trade deadline. But, man, they in the first half of this game was 285 yards to 103. So this was a game where you went to a 3-4 team, and all the stats say it was fairly one-sided, and now are you gonna give away or trade away Leonard Williams and Robbie Anderson? And it's just a tough spot to be in. Not like those two guys are going to sink them if, let's say, they get traded, but it's a tough spot.
It's a very tough spot. I suspect what's going to happen here. I don't know how the trade deadline shakes out, but this seems to be trending in the direction of a near total teardown, which is, of course, not optimal considering A, they thought they were going in the right direction this year and started building a roster, they thought. And that has all kind of blown up in their face, and it was choppy with the GM exchange. So I think the Jets are in a very bad spot. But again, what you've heard about Darnold is that hopefully the Jets don't ruin Sam Darnold. And you get so nervous that if Adam Gase really is going to be this overmatched on a weekly basis, is he a guy that you really should consider a one and done with? And next week's going to be big because I think he's still probably somewhat safe. But if you go and you lose to the Dolphins, it's going to turn into a massive public outcry situation, and we'll see what happens, how Jets management deals with that.
Well, they have a little bit of, you know, motivation, the Dolphins, to stick it to Gase. I don't know what a total teardown means for someone like Le'Veon Bell, who doesn't look like he did a whole lot today either, but it's you're right, it's a tough situation.
I loved it, by the way, just like the Leonard Fournette box score every week. That's 19 for 76 with a 66-yard run.
It's happened like five times.
What happened on the 18
Nobody has more like 6-yard losses than that guy.
That's what happens when you're like really good straight ahead, but you don't move side to side.
Right, and he seems to think he could bail himself out of trouble when he starts shuffling around. It just turns into an outright disaster. All right, let's move on.
Cooper Kupp in motion from the left side. It's a give, and now it's an end around. A toss back for a flea flicker, and Goff throws right side at midfield. It's Cooper Kupp with a block. Split you down the right sideline. He will kick it in. Touchdown, LA. An end around reverse. Toss back, flea flicker for a six.
Where do you go to design plays like this?
J.B. Long, Wes's neighbor, and MJD of the Rams Radio Network. Have a day, Cooper Kupp. The third-year wide receiver caught seven passes for a career-best 220 yards. And that touchdown you just heard, the biggest play in a 24-10 win for the Rams over the still winless Bengals at Wembley Stadium in London. Wes, the Rams rolled up 470 yards of offense in this one. Are they starting to get back on track?
I guess you could say that, but they've played two tomato cans in the last 2
okay.
weeks in the Falcons.
Cupcakes?
Falcons and Bengals. The Bengals play borderline respectable football on one side of the ball in each half. Mm. They outrushed the Rams. Their much maligned, beleaguered, woebegone ground attack outrushed the Rams in the first half. And their defense actually did okay in the second half, but they also dropped 3 or 4 interceptions that Goff threw right to them. Mm. The Rams... Dante Fowler has 4.5 sacks in the last 2 weeks. He's come on as a force. Cooper Kupp, 220 yards on 7 catches. He had 5 catches of 20 yards in a single half, the first half, which was the most in a half since Calvin Johnson 8 years ago. This is a testament to the preseason level of cornerbacks that the Bengals are running out there. There is just so much open space in their secondary. A lot of missed tackles, missed interceptions, drops, coverage busts. It just looks like an August defense right now because it really is. Their top 3 cornerbacks are all injured. Mm.
The Rams, though, sometimes the schedule, it's not just the overall strength of schedule, it's when you get teams. They really needed the Falcons and Bengals the last couple weeks. And they get to their bye now coming home from London. They have Jalen Ramsey. They're not running the ball well still, even against the Bengals that, you know, they don't top 100 yards. Gurley doesn't have a big day. But I do think they're in at 5-3. Their next two after the bye are the Steelers and Bears. They're not in a terrible spot. They're finding way. They've found ways to stay right in the playoff mix without being at their best. They're just going to have to be a lot better in the second half.
Yeah, and just learn to be a committee backfield because let's stop pretending that anything else is happening with that cast of players right now.
I love that Taylor Rapp, their second-round rookie, at safety is now playing full-time snaps and leading the team in tackles. I think that might even be an upgrade over John Johnson there. He is a good player. The one worry coming out of this game, Brandon Cooks was concussed, and this is an ongoing issue for him going back to that big hit he took in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. I don't know how long he'll be out this time.
That's his fourth concussion since Super Bowl 52. A few weeks ago, we had this conversation that after the third concussion, we were getting into that danger territory. Austin Collie is a name that came up. It's a horrible thought because that guy is a star wide receiver when he's right, but he just seems prone to this, and it usually
scary
doesn't end
too,
well.
Because he's been out cold when he's been out.
Right.
Going back to his days with the Saints. So it didn't even just start at the Super Bowl. That's... You would be surprised if you saw him again.
Right?
Why come back this season?
To bring him back if he's had 2 in a month?
I mean...
These are brain injuries.
We don't know what the team knows, so we'll defer to them, but it feels...
Let's thank cease you, Mark. Discussion.
Really going to enjoy this bit.
Move.
It's not a bit. It is like interconnected with everything we do all week long.
Let's move on.
Play fake, Russ looks, he's going to throw the back of the end zone, wide open, it's Metcalf, touchdown, Seahawks!
We should have like a buzzer every time we start
Russell
to go in that territory.
Man in his face,
and ejector seat.
And coolly and calmly drop that ball over the top to a wide open DK Metcalf, and the Seahawks have pushed the metal all the way down to the floor, leading 23-0.
Pedal to the metal. Another way to say that, Steve Rabel, Seahawks Radio Network. DK Metcalf, good rookie. The wide receiver hooked up with Russell Wilson for 2 short touchdowns. Chris Carson added 90 yards on the ground and a touchdown as well. A 27-20 win for the Seahawks over the moribund Atlanta Falcons. Greg, the Seahawks jumped ahead 24-0 here before coasting to the finish. I guess with Matt Ryan sidelined, this was never going to be a fair fight.
It wasn't, and yet to go off the play-by-plays analogy, you know, if the floor pedal to was to the metal in the first half,
Steve Rabel,
they just stuck that thing in neutral, and they were trying to save gas, and they were just, I don't know, they're listening to a podcast. I don't know what Pete Carroll is doing in the second half, because I talked about it going into this game. Can they win a game convincingly by a couple scores, or is Pete Carroll going to keep playing to what he thinks this team's good at, defense and running? It played almost exactly to that. Tyler Lockett was unbelievable. Caught all six of his targets for 100 yards. Some of these catches and throws were just outrageous. You would think Pete Carroll would want to see more of that, but what happened in the second half is they ran the ball, had three and outs, and they played to their defense, and their defense isn't that good. And you know why? You know when you know your defense isn't that good? When Matt Schaub lights you up for 460 yards.
What?
Matt Schaub getting it done.
Wait, wow. What? 460?
Holy.
That's right.
9 yards per attempt.
Yeah, but we're talking garbage time, right?
Not really. I mean, they got it to within one possession. Yes, there was... You never felt like the Seahawks were in trouble, and when they were, they made a nice field goal drive. But they also fumbled the ball at the one-yard line in the second half, so this game could have been closer. I'm not calling it garbage time if they had got it close and they fumbled the ball at the one.
I like the way—
Make a stop.
One way to throw your opponent off is to say, oh, we have Matt Schaub filing in under center. We're going to throw the ball 52 times. See how you respond
to
that.
They fell behind so early, and he did make some— fine throws. He was moving the ball. He made a couple really big mistakes, so he still had, you know, some shots.
Do you think it motivates him to hear the endless stream of jokes at Matt Schaub's expense filing into the public Twitter sphere all week long? People going, you know, you would never add this guy. And what if someone added this guy to their fantasy team?
Good for them.
They probably did well. It's a tough moment for Dan Quinn, though, when Matt Schaub comes in, and it's like, Matt Schaub wasn't your problem. It again, was your defense giving up three straight touchdown drives.
Well, and Arthur Blank, the Falcons owner, who I think has been very obviously very supportive of the whole Dan Quinn earth implosion at this point, said that he was, in quotes, extraordinarily disappointed in the Falcons season. That is kind of typically code word for changes lie ahead.
It doesn't sound like Quinn's even to make it to January 1st.
Well, they're here at the bye weeks, and it could be, you know, by the time we reconvene Tuesday, we could be talking about it, which would be too bad. It's not like I think this team is going to suddenly turn it around with any other coach, but I get it. It happened.
I could see him, yeah. Well, we have all offseason to talk about it. But he seems like a classic go back, be a DC, do a good job, and get a second crack at it guy.
Right. If I'm a Seahawks fan, I'm more worried just about the lack of pass
rush.
Rush.
Yeah, they did 2 sacks against this quarterback and O-line combo. Come on.
52 throws. Like, if you look at the PFF ratings, it's like it's great all across the board, and that's a bad sign. Jadeveon Clowney had a nice game, except for a bunch of killer penalties, but he had some pressures.
Four quarterback hits.
But he had pressures. But other than that, they're not getting anything. And Ziggy Ansah has been a big-time free agent bust.
I was just about...
A total surprise, though, is it?
I was going to say, I just out of curiosity, I clicked into Clowney's numbers, and today was just his second sack of the season. I guess he's just never going to be a guy that puts up huge numbers.
He's been a very valuable addition to
that. We hear that about him every year, which I'm not demeaning his play
right.
or anything, but
yeah,
I guess he's just never going to be a guy that's
he's not.
A monster all-pro producer. He was supposed to be that guy.
He's not going to be a 15 to 18 sack guy. He's more like a 9 to 10 and a half sack.
He's more of a
paid like a 18 sack guy, which is why Bill O'Brien didn't want him around anymore.
Well, you know who the Texans could use, though?
Who? Oh.
Jadeveon Clowney. Maybe trade for him back. Give up a first rounder for him.
Like, even the biggest contract ever for a defensive end.
Speaking of trade,
linebacker.
By the way, Rashad Penny's name has come up. As someone that teams are calling Seahawks about.
Interesting. He had a couple of big runs today in the first half.
They're going anti-Kenyon Drake
early.
With their Sunday approach.
Great headline on the GM app for that.
Oh, yeah.
Penny for your thoughts.
Love it.
And it's like, let's get into the combo.
Yeah. We are really dropping the ball, the bag, whatever it is, on this whole GM app thing.
Let's move on. Like, Penny for your thoughts, and then in parentheses, or draft picks.
Jarrell Casey, the first one there.
Penny for your penny.
Him down short of the first down.
Mike Keith with the call, Titans Radio Network. Jarrell Casey. Jarrell Casey exploded into the backfield and blew up Peyton Barber on 4th-and-1, ending the Buccaneers' final real scoring threat and helping to lift the Titans to a 27-23 win. That's two straight wins for Tennessee since Ryan Tannehill replaced Marcus Mariota in the starting lineup. Wes, this Titans defense, they could play, right?
They can, but this was about a mistake-prone Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense. And it's weird because you could, as Bruce Arians did after the game, excuse the quarterback from all four of his turnovers. You could look at it and say it was the receiver's fault in the two interceptions. It was the offensive line's fault in the two fumbles. And it's a little disingenuous that Bruce Arians went there when his quarterback spent the entire game throwing the ball up for grabs, often to his benefit because Mike Evans was making plays. But there were a handful of plays where the closest player to the ball was a Titans defender, and Winston was lucky not to be picked on at least five plays. So I think it was disingenuous, but this is the version of Bruce Arians we're getting after games now. Just disingenuous, like the time that he claimed that he pushed his kicker back, whatever, to cover for some other mistake. So I don't know what we're getting out of Bruce Arians, but I do know what we're getting out of Jameis Winston, and it's sloppy play, a frantic quarterback who does not handle pressure well and finds himself running around behind the line of scrimmage on most of his dropbacks.
And yet they outgained the Titans. They probably had a better defensive
Part of that is because all these turnovers gave the ball to the Titans at the 10-yard line, and you can't get a lot of yards when you only have 10 yards before the end zone.
That checks out.
I do think Arians did call Mike Evans, who had 198 yards and two touchdowns, the most talented receiver he's ever coached.
Oh, dang. Larry Fitz is like, what?
In that mix there.
Well, he got the end of Antonio Larry Fitz's career.
He had Antonio Brown at one point, didn't he?
Yeah.
He was with the Colts.
I mean, when you watch Mike Evans play in a game like this,
it's like Wes said, disingenuous.
I mean, I was going to say, do you think that is trying to pour positive? I mean, the whole
Mike Evans is incredibly talented.
You can look at Mike Evans play and say, this guy should never be stopped. All you have to do is throw the ball up for grabs, and no cornerback can stop him because he's a stretch forward in cleats. And that's how he looked today. He was doing this against Kevin Byard, against Logan Ryan, against LaShawn Sims, who had no prayer against him. It was a big Mike Evans game, but credit to the Titans. Ryan Tannehill had a huge 90-yard, 12-play drive when the Bucs had taken control of the game and the Titans had not moved the ball in two quarters. They, you know, on that drive, Derrick Henry had a 42-yard run called back on a holding penalty. 1st-and-20, it looks like the Titans are never going to get their offense going. And Tannehill moved the chains with a couple of tight window throws. You can't come away like tremendously impressed with the Titans, especially when they call a 4th-and-2 fake field goal and let their unathletic punter try to beat Devin White, a linebacker, in the open field.
Titans are never really asking us to come away overly impressed with them.
I mean, they're back to 4-4, though. The dream of the fourth straight 9-7 is alive.
It's 27-23. There are 3 minutes and 45 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Titans, onions, hanging them for days, Zeppelin onions. But Brett Kern, you're asking him to turn the corner and get that first down. He gets absolutely leveled. He fumbles the ball. Scooped up by the Bucs, run in for the go-ahead game-winning touchdown. Bucs win. No, they blew the whistle again. They did it again. And the Bucs are annoyed about it, as they should be, just like Sean Payton was annoyed about it, because you can't get that wrong. That was a scoop and score that should have won that game, and it got taken away because an official did the wrong thing. And I thought this would be cleaned up a little bit, and it seemed like it was because the Saints made such a stink about it, rightly so, in week two. But here we are again, costing another team in a huge spot. It's unacceptable. Can't happen.
Well said. I prefer to point the finger at Mike Vrabel, who never met a trick special teams play he didn't love. But this was one of the most telegraphed fake field goals you will ever see. It was obvious that he wanted no part of a field goal there. They went up to the line of scrimmage, tried to get the defense to jump off sides, acted like they were going for it on 4th-and-2, and then they run the fake field goal because they don't trust double doink Cody Parkey.
One final thought on this game, the game coverage on Fox. Wes, both of us were quite happy to hear an exuberant, healthy-sounding Matt Millen doing his thing. He's always been really good at this.
I totally agree. I think people he's gotten a bad name because of his general manager experience, but I think he's always been a good announcer, and I love to see a guy who has – I mean, he was on his deathbed. We weren't sure if he was ever going to be able to do this again, and now he is enjoying it, and he's good at it.
He has someone else's heart, a miracle of modern medicine. Let's hear, actually. I just want to play that Jarrell Casey, the big stop. Just, a shout-out to Matt Millen, who is alive and kicking.
Watch this. Watch Jarrell Casey right in the middle. He's right here. Oh, look at, he just mauled him. That's awesome. Jarrell Casey, you get a star on your helmet too. That's, oh, what a great job on the top side. That is just awesome. I love defense, man. Especially when it looks like that.
I think it's
a purer moment. It's a better experience, and you savor it more when you think it's going to be taken away from you for the rest of your life, and that's what happened with Matt Millen.
Spoken.
I'm also impressed that we had two of the four of us heavily monitoring Titans Bucks.
Can't look away from those Titans, baby.
Let's move on.
Colts have four down linemen. Dropping the throw is Flacco. Steps up into the pocket. Has time. Now he's going to roll to his right. Here's he goes. The ball is out. It's at the 30-yard line. Bannigo hit him. The football, the loose football, is picked up by the Broncos. The clock is running, though. We're down to four. We're down to three. The Broncos can't pick, get back to the line of scrimmage. And that's it. That's the end of the game. The Colts win it. The Colts win it. The Broncos got back on it, but they could not get back to the line of scrimmage before the game clock expired, and that's the end of the game. The Colts win it 15-13.
Matt Taylor, Colts Radio Network, with the call. Adam Vinatieri made a 51-yard field goal, 22 seconds to play. And then Ben Bannigo?
Bannigo.
Put the final touches on the game with a punishing sack of Flacco, Joe Flacco, locking up a 15-13 win for the Colts over the Broncos at Lucas Oil Stadium. Mark, it seems that all the Colts know how to do is play close games. Luckily, they're good at those.
They are. And, I mean, this game took on a somewhat flavorless approach for a big chunk of the time. But I think that's kind of fine if you're a Colts fan or if you're the coach of the Colts, because you don't mind being in these games. You don't have an arsenal of weapons that are going to produce gigantic plays. You're not going to get some of these box scores that some of these other teams are producing. The Broncos have played well on defense for a while now, and they did that again. They really shut Jacoby Brissett and the Colts attack down to the point where I thought Marlon Mack was just not the guy he's been in other weeks. They weren't able to get into any sort of a flow. But the play of the game, which, you know, we showed the sack of Flacco at the end, and the Broncos, as they will do on offense, had the ball twice in the final 7 minutes, up 13-12, and did nothing with it. And that's fine. We've been all over Denver's offense for what they are. They traded away Emmanuel Sanders. They're not going to get any better. And the Colts defense, if they're a rather no-name-ish operation, they got the job done well. They just played well from wire to wire today. Jacoby Brissett avoided in the end zone on the game-winning field goal drive what would have been a crushing hit from Von Miller to unleash a really beautiful 35-yard connection to T.Y.
Hilton. That was the throw of the day from anyone.
It really was.
One of the plays of the year.
It really was. And Brissett is not perfect, and he's not always easy to watch. And whether sometimes even the way his windup and the way he throws the ball is just bizarre. And I know, Wes, he's not your favorite quarterback on the planet.
No, but the Colts don't care what the Around the NFL podcast thinks about their playing style.
They don't really need to, too. They got in that drive,
hey, I support Jacoby Brissett, well, Frank, if you're out there.
I like
love
some
you,
Jake Brissett, too. We're all good.
I know that drive also drove Greg nuts because the Colts seemed content to line up for a game-winning field goal, and not a gimme by Adam Vinatieri after Vinatieri had missed a PAT and missed a 45-yarder, but it nailed some other long kicks, I think a 55-yarder in that dome. So they were, you know, they could have maybe pressed the issue a little bit to get closer or even go for the score. They seem very into the Adam Vinatieri experience where they want to, A, they didn't give up on him earlier in the year, but lift him up whenever he gets into trouble. And he came out of this game making the kick, so they look good.
51 yards.
That's all great analysis, Mark. But what I love the most about
where
this
are we
game,
going from here? Why are we qualifying
what's
that?
What's the butt?
All I care about is okay. Angry Joe Flacco at the podium.
Oh, please. Yeah.
Annoyed with his offense's conservative approach. Listen to Joey Flax here.
Well, I mean, come on. I just look at it like we're now a 2-6 football team, and we're like afraid to go for it in a 2-minute drill. You know, like who cares if you give the ball back to the guys with a minute and 40 seconds left? They obviously got the field goal anyway. And once again, we're a 2-6 football team, and it just feels like we're kind of afraid to lose a game. It's 3rd and 5 at the end of the game. You know, it's who cares if they have a timeout there at the end or not? You know, getting in field goal range isn't that tough. You know, so you're just putting your defense in these bad situations, and I just felt like, what do we have to lose? Like, why can't we be aggressive in some of these situations? That's kind of how I feel about a lot of the game today.
We never hear Joe Flacco like that. He's been in the league forever. And, you know, that's a shot across the bow of first-year offensive coordinator Rick Scangarello. Scang, as we call him.
And the head coach.
Or the head coach, if he's the one, you know, saying, I want to run here. You almost could hear Flacco. And I've, you know, been in this situation sometimes when you're speaking and as you're getting to the end of your point, you realize, oh, this is going to piss off my superiors. And you just start to trail off a little, but you still got to, like, finish the point.
Oh, you always finish, Greg.
Yeah, you still have to finish the point out. He was right. It's the situation he's talking about is 3rd and 5 at the Colts' 43-yard line. One first down wins the game. The Colts only have one timeout, and they run the ball up the middle for no gain. You have 5 yards to go win a game. I know it's Flacco, but the timeout doesn't matter. That's the thing. That's what he's really getting to is this old school approach. Oh, let's take their timeout. They can go get a field goal. They did it easily.
I think he speaks for Broncos fans too, who, you know, Flacco, yes, he's part of the issue and he's limited at quarterback, but he's seen a ton of starts. And he's right about this. The Broncos want to win games under Vic Fangio 10-7. And good luck with
that's
that.
Not
you
football
can't do that
anymore.
In 2019.
I think he's right. And I also think there were a lot of Broncos writers and Broncos fans who were left wondering after that podium appearance, why don't you play with that fire that you're, you know, the words are coming out of your mouth. Let's see your playing style reflect it.
All right, let's move on to Sunday Night Football.
Snap, Rodgers looking, pump fakes. Now, still looking under pressure. Throws it right side of the end zone. Is it caught? It is caught in the back line of the end zone for a touchdown. A sensational play to Jamal Williams. My goodness, in the far right corner of the end zone.
You got to go back to the throw in Aaron Rodgers. He's going backwards. And he throws a remarkably accurate bullseye.
My goodness, what a pass that was by Aaron Rodgers.
Wayne Larrivee and Larry McCarron with the call. Packers Radio Network. These are the good days on the Packers Radio Network because the home team is a good team. A great team. 7-1 now after a 31-24 win over the Kansas City Chiefs at Arrowhead. Rodgers to Jamal Williams, one of the best throws you'll see. Unbelievable. And it's more lights-out play from the Green Bay quarterback who finishes 23 of 33 for 305 yards and 3 touchdowns without a pick. Chris Wessling, the Pack. Listen, no Patrick Mahomes, but the Pack, another very impressive win in primetime.
Well, I think even when you have one of the all-time greats in a sport, the fan base gets a little concerned and a little worried when they go through an extended slump like the Packers did last year. And for what Aaron Rodgers has done the last 3 games, probably ranks with any 3-game stretch of his career. He's been just unbelievable. A 152 passer rating the last 2 games. He had quite a few drops against the Lions that weren't his fault. He's just been playing transcendent football. It's been fun to watch. And this is without his number one receiver, Davante Adams. They're only going to get stronger. They're only going to get better, the rhythm between Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers. And now, as Dan Orlovsky, the former Lions quarterback, pointed out, LaFleur has found a way to use Aaron Jones the way that Sean McVay used to use Todd Gurley, as a dual-purpose threat, a receiving threat. And it makes you automatically think, what was Mike McCarthy missing about Aaron Jones that he didn't use him as a receiver? And to Jones's credit, he's improved tremendously in that area.
Well, he's been one of the most dynamic, explosive running backs in the league all season. Now, he's not getting the usage that is going to, you know, carry fantasy teams every week, although he's had the touchdowns to do it. But this game, he had 159 yards as a receiver, 127 when aligned out wide as a wideout, according to Next Gen Stats. That blows any other game in the 4 years that Next Gen Stats has been keeping track of this out of the water in terms of catching passes as a wide receiver. And I love this because Matt LaFleur saw weakness and he went after it, and the Chiefs never fixed it. Now, I know there's a lot of different things you have to stop when you stop the Packers, but at a certain point, if they keep putting a linebacker out there, then you're just going to keep throwing it to him. You got to change it up, and they didn't. And so right down to the last play of the game, it's 3rd and 5. Very similar situation to the one Joe Flacco was honking about.
Joey Flax.
And you know what Matt LaFleur did? You could read his lips on the sideline. He said, let's go win. Let's go get
nice.
A win.
That's what you want from your head coach. You want confidence and the belief in your players to execute. It helps to have Aaron Rodgers on your side.
It does, but I mean, Matt LaFleur, I think, for in terms of looking 15 years younger than most head coaches, in terms of people thinking that Aaron Rodgers maybe didn't really respect Matt LaFleur at the beginning of this journey, the pregame comments with Mike Tirico interviewing Aaron Rodgers, I thought put all that to bed in the sense that Rodgers wants to win, number one. That's happening right now. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I cannot think of a more magical way to cap the 100th NFL season than Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick, who's been around forever, against Aaron Rodgers and a first-year head coach in Matt LaFleur that's doing everything you could have asked. That none of that may happen.
Saints fans aren't happy with you. 49ers fans aren't happy
Saints
with you.
Saints fans have been in the playoffs over and over and over.
I don't want to see Bill Belichick against Matt LaFleur in the Super Bowl, but you know what? That's a long way off.
I'm just saying a Rodgers-Brady matchup, and I'm talking about Rodgers not with Mike McCarthy, but Rodgers with this new relationship.
That's no matchup right now because Brady is in the expert game manager stage of his career, which is a nice place to be. Rodgers is at the height of his powers right now.
He also has weapons on his offensive line that are protecting him. This what Rodgers said it after the game. He didn't have to do much. He had the throw to Kumerow in the first quarter, which was one of the top 10 throws of Aaron Rodgers' season, which is an amazing top 10 list right now.
Yes.
He had the touchdown. Other than that, it was a lot of throws to Aaron Jones out wide, and you know he didn't have to do too much. They're running the ball well. The Chiefs' defense was very shorthanded. No Frank Clark, no Kendall Fuller, no Chris Jones. So they should score a lot of points on them, and they did.
Well, they scored a lot more points that were called back on penalties. Aaron Jones seemed like he was scoring every time he touched the ball for a while.
Mm. All right, so the Chiefs are in a little bit of trouble right now. They're 5-3, which is okay. 3 losses at Arrowhead.
Good performance by Matt Moore, though.
I like
prime
Matt Moore.
Nice shot by Matt Moore. Threw 2 touchdown passes. Certainly did not kill them and got hot to get them back in the game after they fell behind 14-0 early. But it wasn't enough. You look ahead, they got the Vikings. That's going to be a tough game. Then at Tennessee, and we're hearing it's possible that Patrick Mahomes is back for that game. They need to get their star in the lineup and win this division.
They're in the right division. I don't think it's time to worry about the Chiefs.
No. But I think Kansas City, though, would have, after what happened last January, coming into this year, the goal would have been host New England this time.
That ain't
and
happening.
That's a lot would need to happen for that to even be a possibility.
No, the division's right for them. And really, the conference, their goal is to get Mahomes back healthy and get a bye. And I think that is right in front of them to accomplish. I don't think that's out of it to. And who knows, Baltimore, New England next week, you know, maybe.
Find a way next week.
There's a little race there.
All right.
What could go wrong for Baltimore?
That Vikings team is rolling.
Right. NFC North is crazy right now. Bears fans, you already have a loss to the Packers. You're 3-4. The Vikings are 7-1. I mean, that feels over for the Bears right now, and that is an incredible race where the loser between the Vikings and the Packers are going to have to be on the road to start the playoffs.
It's Bears
the
are Bears. Old news.
It's over
they
for the Bears.
Old news.
And before we sign off,
6 feet up.
This was a tough day for you, Mark. Not talking about the Browns. Shaq Barrett got his 10th sack of the season. I'm sorry.
I mean,
we're all sorry.
My prediction, at least, I'll say this. It feels like it was a month and a half ago that he had 8, and then he had 9 suddenly, and then he stood at 9 for a while, you know?
Well, you predicted.
And it was not
he's
a
had
Shaq.
2 sacks in 4 games.
You nailed it.
So, yeah, you said he would not get to 10.
I nailed it.
He's had 4 games since, and he has 2 sacks in those games. I mean, that's okay.
I mean, there was something to it.
Well,
and it was not just Shaq Barrett related.
But what is it about Shaq Barrett that you personally
all
wanted
right, enough of this
his life to be?
We've already been there. I mean, this is redundant for anyone that's listened to more than one episode at this point.
Taysom Hill, good day there. You might
Taysom
be able
Hill
to counterbalance
scored.
This.
Taysom Hill scored.
Great. All right. We'll be back on
Jets got thumped
Tuesday. So did your Browns. They both suck. How about that?
One more. One sucks just a little more.
That's true. One's a little bit more of a disappointment, though.
I don't know. It depends who you're asking. Is your dad more disappointed with the Browns or the Jets?
I don't know. This is going nowhere. All right. We will be back on Tuesday with a great episode. It's trade deadline Tuesday, and we're going to be here recording right as the deadline hits. And so make sure you check in on that. And then, of course, you know how it goes. We'll preview the first game of Week 9, and we do the whole thing again. We are a well-oiled machine right now. Let's get out of here. Dan Hans is signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Rick Hollywood behind the glass, everyone else behind the glass. Thanks, everybody. Till Tuesday.